Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics, one from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 479 for comics originally released on October 12th, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC is Supergirl number 2. This is, of course, part of the Rebirth brand or whatever, initiative, I guess would be the way to put it. Did you read the previous Supergirl series?
Probably not all of it.
The one that started with the New 52?
Yeah, I know I dabbled in it, but I know I didn't finish.
Okay. And are you watching the TV show?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I've watched I watched the full first season, the first episode of the second season, have not yet had a chance to watch the second episode, which, as we record, aired last night. As people listen, aired last week. But I'm liking the show.
Yeah, I haven't watched any of the CW stuff yet, so I'm excited to see what they change and what they're doing differently and what they're keeping the same. So yeah, I enjoyed that first season on CBS though.
Yeah, it was some good stuff. It's clear to me that they are kind of using this title to kind of reposition the character a little bit to be a bit more in line with the television show. But it's weird because it's a strange blend of the Supergirl that we've had in the comics in the New 52 and kind of the Kara Danvers from the TV show, or almost the Kara Danvers like right before the TV show, because Cat Grant in this issue is starting up CatGo Worldwide Media, and there are other things, the two parents or whatever, that are her agents at the DEO and just the DEO itself. They're very much trying to keep what they had, but you kind of have the best of both worlds, if you know what I mean. And I got really mixed feelings on that, because while I like what they're doing on the TV show, either buy into it entirely and kind of reposition everything around that, or kind of don't, but to pick and choose aspects of it, I got mixed. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that's the right choice. I think they can, if they want to pivot that way, then yeah. Take the whole step and do it that way. I didn't read. They did a digital first version of this, right? At some point,
Not of this series. No, they've done a digital first one.
Isn't there Adventures of Supergirl?
But that was a different series, and that was the Supergirl of the CW CBS show.
Right. Well, it doesn't matter. They've done a digital first Supergirl.
Okay, but this isn't a digital first, is my point.
Right. But, I mean, so they were kind of dabbling in that. I didn't read that one that well, but I know they were dabbling in the mimicking the show. And I would think, you know, that was either as successful as it was or it wasn't. And either live in that world concurrently with between episodes and do it that way, or kind of do your own thing. I don't know if you can do this halfway in and out.
Well, they've for both Flash and Arrow, they've done digital first comics that are based on the TV show in that continuity with those versions of those characters, done print versions of those, and that's coexisted with Green Arrow and the Flash in the New 52 Rebirth universe. And while they've made a few minor steps, more so in Arrow than Flash, to get things a little bit more in line, with Supergirl, this is really the first time with this whole Rebirth, that issue, the first issue, and now the second issue, that they've been tweaking the status quo of this version to very much be in line with the show. So I would say the digital first thing they did wasn't mimicking the show, it was adjunct to the show. Whereas here they're doing kind of that half pivot and leaning in the direction of the show in some areas, but not others. And this Kara, this Supergirl, seems very different than the New 52 version, which is the same character and the same sort of it's the same continuity of the character. I hesitate to say it's the same version of the character because I'm saying it feels different. It's like it's a different version, but it's the same person, if you will. They're really walking a fine line here, and in some respects they're doing okay, other respects not so much. They're kind of disavowing aspects of the New 52 Supergirl without like blatantly disavowing the past. They're just kind of comfortably or conveniently ignoring aspects of it. And it just seems like it's yet another in a long line of attempts over the years and decades to kind of do a fresh start with the character, or fresh-ish, because again, it's a bit derivative of the show. Again, good show, so that's not a problem. But it feels like they've de-aged the character a little bit, and I don't know. It's I want to like this series more than I am. I think it's okay at best. The art's not knocking my socks off. It's not bad. It's okay. But between that, you know, I'm not a fan of this version of the Eradicator that they brought in, and where they're going with him. And it seemed fairly reminiscent of a story we'd gotten in the previous Supergirl volume, that it feels a little bit like a retread type thing. And I think they could have started this volume stronger.
Yeah, definitely. It feels very much reminiscent of the Burnside Batgirl reimagining that happened in the New 52. She feels a little more youthful than I remember, and it's got that millennial style. A lot of her nemesis, the guy that got the Catco thing, you know, he's going to be an annoying thorn in her side going forward. That's I'm not looking forward to that storyline playing out. I can kind of see where they're going to go with that. Steve Orlando's writing this, and I think he's also co-scripting a lot of the Monster Men series, the little mini event going on over there in some of the Bat titles, which I think is just okay. So I'm not real thrilled with this guy as a writer. I think the Brian Ching art is okay. But yeah, it's very reminiscent of that early Batgirl reimagining, but not quite as good.
Yeah, I hadn't made that association, but I think you're right on the money. It's take an existing character, retool it, rejuvenate in some respects, and see if it clicks. I hadn't realized this is the same guy who's writing some of the Monster Men stuff, because I have found that to be okay, but a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
And this has the germ of a good idea and whatnot. It's just, there's aspects of the execution that's not working for me.
Yeah, I think we were kind of, some of the early returns on the Rebirth titles were overwhelmingly better than the New 52 versions of those. And now as they're kind of playing out, you're seeing some real stellar work in some of the Superman family of titles and things. And Batman the Batman family might be taking a step back and not quite as good. So where does this fit? I'm not liking this much at all. And there have been some missteps for me in this Rebirth relaunch. And it can't all be home runs for everyone. And this is one of those that's just not getting the job done for me.
Yeah. I guess the problem I have, or the problem this title has for me, is it's hard to not compare it both to the previous Supergirl stuff in the comics and the various DC TV shows, and it's not coming out favorably in any of those comparisons. It's not a hideous book. It's not one you should avoid at all costs or anything, but if you're liking some of what they're trying to do here with Kara, watch the TV show. They do it better. You know, if you want to see stuff with Supergirl or whatever, either watch the show or some other comics. I think that they've done better with the character in the past. And when we've got this Ben Rubel or whatever, the guy who, you know, she's competing with for that Catco internship or whatever, you know, I look at him and he reminds me of the guy they introduced a season or so back on Arrow as Kurt Holt or whatever.
Felicity's buddy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And because this is a character that's got the TV show, that's interacted with Flash, who's interacted with Arrow, you know what I mean? It's, I don't know, it's just kind of weird. I guess for me, I'm going to keep going with it. I would like to see this kind of get better. I think de-aging the character into high school was a bad move. It's not a title I can really recommend unless you're a hardcore Supergirl fan and, I mean, like, need to have everything of the character. It's not one I think you also need to avoid at all costs, like I said. I'm going to go with a C+. This is, to me, not one of the train wrecks or anything of either the New 52 or Rebirth, but it's certainly not one of the crown jewels by a wide margin.
Yeah, I think it's well below average. I'm going to give it the C-. And I've given it enough rope to hang itself for me, so I'm done with the title, and I'll revisit it again later based on someone's recommendation that it's something you can't miss. So I don't recommend this to anyone. There's better use of your time in the Rebirth line somewhere else or in another publisher.
Yeah. With that, shall we move on to Marvel?
Sure.
We've got Darth Vader number 25. This is the final issue of this series. I think this is a series both of us have really been enjoying a lot. I love the cover here, which has kind of got the Darth Vader helmet kind of merging into the Death Star. Kind of a cool look there.
Very cool.
I'm sorry to see this series end. I think it's really done some great stuff in the Star Wars universe. The droids of 000 and BT have been great additions to the Star Wars universe. And this is a series where, you know, it's done such a great job with the characters that it's like, okay, I know they want to end it, that's fine, but they could have kept going for another 25 and I'd been happy. That having been said, in some respects, I think this was a really good end cap to the series. There are one or two other cases on where I think they could have drastically improved this. One of the first things that stood out to me in the first story, because there's three stories in here, was these space whales that Vader is fighting as he's trying to get to this Star Destroyer. And at first I'm like, well, that seems a little out of place in the Star Wars universe. I mean, a case could definitely be made that they could easily exist based on the creatures we've seen in the movies and stuff like that. But I'm like, why would anyone try to harness a space whale for a ship when you can clearly build Star Destroyers, Death Stars, and stuff like that without any real problem? So I have yet to understand the rationale for these things. Up until I got later in the story, where it was very clear that they needed to be there for Vader to pull one of the things he does. It just wouldn't have worked any other way, almost. I'm like, all right, but I at least didn't see that coming a mile away when I first saw the space wheel. So it's like, all right, it was cool, it worked, I'll give him that. This, I felt, gave a good end cap to the main storyline. It was fun, it was enjoyable, but when I hit kind of the center of the book, I hit that staple, I do a page flip, and I'm seeing end credits. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. It's like two page flips after that, and suddenly, you know, here's the writer, here's the artist. I'm like, dude, there's more of the book. There's about almost half the book left. What's going on here? Fortunately, I then flipped the page again, and there was more story. So that would have, if they hadn't done that and it just been backup filler stuff, I'd have been really annoyed.
Yeah.
As it was, that second story, for me, was the highlight of the issue, along with where it had kind of kicked off from previously. And it's funny, because it's only, what, four pages or something? Four, maybe five? Four, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the part I'd like to see, well, what happens next? But man, after that, when we got that Tusken Raider story, between the lack of dialogue, which made it a quick read, it just, in the story itself, it didn't do much for me. And then the cover gallery at the end, it's like 60 covers for 25 issues? Really? And then I stopped and thought, it's like, well, actually, I would have figured it would have been higher, given how many covers they tend to do these days. But for a $5.99 price point, and for a series that's been as great as this one has, I was really hoping with an oversized issue, they would have just knocked it so far out of the park that we would have been just sitting here stunned with, wow, this was an amazing issue.
Yeah, I get that. It was good, not great, and then the price doesn't help. I do have a gripe. If you see the page where Aphra and the Emperor are kind of confronting Darth Vader, mm-hmm. and at one point she says, you are going to be in trouble or something like that.
Oh boy, are you in trouble? Yeah.
Yeah. How does yours read?
In terms of.
Yeah, read it word for word, that reaction.
Oh boy, are you in trouble?
Yeah, okay.
That's so funny, I hadn't even noticed that. Typo,
small,
yeah.
Small typo, and you know, it's a really small publisher, so that they're not going to be able to catch all these. Oh wait, they have assistant editor Heather Antos, editor Jordan D. White, executive editor C.B. Cebulski, editor-in-chief Axel Alonso, senior editor Frank Parisi, creative director Michael. It goes on and on. There are tons of people involved in this book, and you couldn't proof this, Marvel? This is my occasional soapbox on big two typos should not happen. You have way too much overhead. You're paying way too many people to check this stuff. This stuff should not get through. It drives me nuts.
Yeah, and it's not a typo like they inverted two characters or something like that. It's clearly a grammatical mistake. But you're right, there should be so many eyes on this book that seeing print is unfortunate. I'm surprised I didn't notice it. I guess at that point in the story where she's essentially ratted Vader out to the Emperor,
yeah,
I'm like, oh man, she didn't. She did. And then clearly she did not get the reaction she was expecting.
Yeah.
Or maybe she did.
It was great.
Yeah.
It was great. The way it played out, and I thought it was a really great, gripes aside, it was a really great end to this and kind of launching of her character into some whatever's next for her. I didn't see, you know, the double twist coming, the fact that did she rat him out? Did she have it planned all along? You know, it was great. It was great.
Who was thinking what when is a little unclear, but it played wonderfully other than the botched line.
Yeah, other than the botched line.
Han saying, I have feeling bad about this, kind of a thing. It's just, dude, get it right.
I thought it was really great. And, agree, the stuff with the Tusken Raiders was a bit forgettable. And I could have used more murder droids or something else to kind of put the capstone on this series. But all in all, really, really fun series. This is not not a lot of value for your $6, but it's a good story, and it's just not as great as it could be.
Yeah, I think, again, the lead story was solid. That little 4-page second story, I thought, really increased the enjoyment both of it and the lead story. But the Tusken Raider thing, frankly, they should have dropped that and lowered the price a buck.
Yeah, that could just be... I don't ever have to have this story, actually. I don't ever have to see this. There's no reason for this one.
If they had dumped that and the covers, they easily could have cut the page count by 8, maybe more pages, taking out an entire signature of the book and therefore lowering the price or giving them the ability to lower the price. I just felt they kind of put that in there as a little bit of a cash grab so they could almost double the price.
Yeah.
And that's annoying. So, for me... I'm kind of penalizing them a little bit for that. I'm going to go with a B. I think if they hadn't ended on I really don't care about this story with the Tusken Raider thing, and it had just been the other two parts, I probably would have gotten into the A range.
Yeah. A $4 or a $5 book without that extra stuff. I think that extra dollar really, really, that's $6, man. That's crazy. That's crazy. It's got to be twice as good as your average comic. And it wasn't.
I think you could get a hamburger for this price. So we need something a little meaty here,
A little meatier. But it was a really good story. It's been a fun ride. So I don't want to crush it too much. I still enjoyed it. So I gave it the B as well. And looking forward to whatever comes next in the Star Wars universe. They've all been pretty good.
I would like to have seen, the more you, now that you mention it, that having the droids, having gotten that page count for the Tusken Raider thing, if we had kind of gotten some kind of a good end cap for them or some such, I don't know what that would have been. It just seems like that was the most ripe for story potential.
I think we've got to give them their own book, at least a miniseries, maybe a one-shot something. I think they've clearly been a breakout, so I would guess that they'll be back.
They have to be back. It would be a real shame if they're not. They were the breakout stars of the surprise stars of this book. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
This is Reborn number 1 from Image. It is written by Mark Millar. We've got Greg Capullo on the art. And it kind of sort of answers the question of, well, what happens when you die? Where do you go? And I'll be honest, this issue started out a little bit more violent than I had expected. Couple of people getting blown away by a sniper, and then it tells us, let me phrase this carefully, we follow the adventures of what's on the other side of death, if you will. I'm not going to say they tell us where you go or what happens, because I'm still kind of really unclear on all of that. And there were aspects of this issue I liked. There were a few parts where it's like, geez, who is this old lady and why should I care? But we kind of needed to really get to know this Bonnie character before she died to care about what happens to her after she dies. But I felt this issue was almost all set up, all prelude, and the main story almost kicks in next issue. I mean, we get parts of it here, but it feels like what's happening on Earth is the preamble, not the meat and potatoes of the story.
Yeah, I pre-ordered this sight unseen. I didn't read the solicit. I knew the title, Reborn. I knew the writer was Mark Millar, and I knew the artist was Greg Capullo. Didn't need to read the solicit. Didn't care. Because that is a superstar creative team that I will read anything that they do. That's pretty amazing. So, you know, I kind of came in cold, and I was immediately kind of taken with Bonnie. I really liked her. She reminded me a little of my grandma, you know, and so I've already got my heart's kind of reaching out to her a little bit. And so I think they did a really great job of getting me invested with her and whetting my appetite for what's coming next. They really did a good job of establishing who you're rooting for and then touching on what this book might be about in the future. Not too much, but boy, your mind's just kind of racing in a bunch of different directions. Ooh, that's her dad. Oh, that's her dog. You know, so is this heaven? What could this be? And how is this going to play out? It was really cool concept. A lot of fun. And I am excited to see where this thing goes. So I thought it really did a good job in 30 pages of laying the ground for it for this.
I think for me it might have worked a little better if either I hadn't read the solicit or they tweaked it a little bit, because the question of where do you go when you die, you know, I honestly I don't think they're really going to totally answer aspects of that in this series, because I'm really puzzled how kind of the quote unquote our life, the regular day to day stuff, because presumably Bonnie's supposed to be just like one of us or whatever, how our sort of reality or whatever would somehow lead to a life in this other realm that they wind up in. It just seemed rather arbitrary and random or whatnot. And it doesn't feel like we're going to get a solid explanation to that. We may get some philosophical kind of mumbo jumbo, but anything more than that would feel out of place in this story. Having set her, Bonnie up as an atheist of there's nothing after you die, you're just done, felt real, felt believable, but now it's like I don't think she's going to be the type to really question the religious aspects or significance or, you know, the metaphysical parts of well, how come she's not dead? The thing was also billed as a sci-fi fantasy sort of story, and I was feeling at the end that world is very more stronger fantasy than sci-fi. But that may just be the way the characters are dressed and stuff. Because, I mean, we've got guns and laser blasters and flying vehicles, sci-fi-looking vehicles and such. So I think part of it is the window dressing on it is got a very fantasy-ish feel to it. Not to say it's not got the sci-fi aspects, but the fantasy was more pronounced to me in a few places, or at least that was the impression I got at the end. Looking back at it, I think they were a little more even-handed than I'm giving them credit for. But I think this really shows how Mark Millar is just the master of tone, style, and character, because by halfway through, I was fairly invested in Bonnie, who she is. I felt like I knew her enough to care about her, and that helps a lot, because there's not really enough plot, per se, I think, from a strictly plot perspective to get somebody onto the next issue. But they did a good enough job on the execution of the story and the realization of the characters and whatnot to more than make up for that.
Yeah, the initial sniper attack in the first, you know, 6-7 pages, and those characters, I didn't feel were fleshed out at all, but kind of just introduced to that world. In fact, one of the characters, when he gets, you know, it teleported into this other world, oh, it looks a lot like Capullo's Bruce Wayne from his New 52 run. And, you know, there's that kind of is a jarring. Of course, it would. His art style is similar. But yeah, that was kind of like a little jar. I'm like, hey, that looks kind of like the Bruce Wayne from Zero Year there. And what's he doing in this comic? And so that was kind of cool to see that. But yeah, that first part, you know, kind of just sets the table just a little bit and gives you a little taste of what might come there. And then you go back to Bonnie, which I thought was much, much better executed. And her story was, you know, of course, the majority of the book and much more important. But we'll see all these characters again. We'll see how they all interact. And if they're all in the same area, I'm assuming they will be. But I don't know what that does to my heaven theory then. Why would those other people be there? I don't know. It's curious. I'm really curious about it, and I'm curious to see where this initial arc goes, and I'm definitely going to stick with it and see where he's at.
So when we get that scene with Bruce Wayne, as you called him, showing up there,
was it just me? Did you see a little reminiscent of
No, I didn't see it at the time, but I definitely see what you're talking about. I was just trying to make the connection of, I guess that's the guy who was just shot.
Yeah, the old guy with the beret, yeah.
If the guy with the beret and the guy in the grass on the next panel had been in the exact same position, that would have been a little clearer to me. It's just the angle was enough different. It's like, I guess that's what they're going for. I wasn't positive.
Yeah, that's exactly what they were going for. But yeah, it didn't show an exact, he wasn't laying in the exact same position he was when he was shot, which would have probably helped connect those dots.
I also might have done it on the same page with those two panels just to connect the dots a little clearer.
Yeah.
But my question is, this lady who's there.
Yeah, who's she?
Who, no time to explain, hey, there's more going on. She's clearly there to gather up these people. Now, if you go to when Bonnie gets over to this new realm, this other guy is there and just on top of her, hey, you know, get down. You know, so clearly he kind of knew she was coming. So that implies a certain connection between this world and Earth, or the previous life or whatever.
Yeah, or a connection between the person who's receiving you when you arrive. There might be a connection between that female character and the Bruce Wayne looking guy.
Certainly possible. I guess my point is, how did they know to be there at the time?
Yeah.
Which implies knowledge of the other realm, maybe, maybe not, don't know. Because, I mean, the guy was shot randomly. So yeah. It's not like they should have seen that coming. Those are the questions I've got that I would, I'm not even going to say I would like answered. I don't expect answered because it feels out of place for the story they're telling in this other world. Because you've got basically, oh, it's the chosen one. She will save us. You know, it's a classic, you know, hero's journey sort of a thing I think they're going to tell us. And that's fine, because I think Mark Millar can do that really well, and I think Capullo's doing a great job in the art here. I just felt like this was more setup than payoff. It was good setup, it was enjoyable setup, but I was hoping for a stronger start to the story than what felt like a prelude and a tease.
Yeah, and being dropped right into this giant war zone, this horde of ogres and giants and other creatures that we're looking at, you'd think, well, it would be tough for them to just stop what they're doing and explain themselves, because it seems really like a poor placement for the landing pad for when you cross over right in this little battle that's going on. That was kind of curious, and I'm interested in how that plays out.
I take that as luck of the draw, because clearly the first guy didn't have that problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was presumably her dad way back when. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with this. I think it's interesting. I think it'll be a good kind of sci-fi fantasy adventure thing. I think billing it as, we'll tell you, you know, here's an explanation for where you go when you die. I don't expect that part to get delivered on. And I'm okay with that. I just would have pitched it maybe a little differently.
Yeah, even if it's, you know, the length of Huck or Starlight or Chrononauts, even as long as Tokyo Ghosts 10 issues, I'm going to be fine with that. I think it'll still be a fun story. Or if he wants to write a little longer, that's great too. I don't expect it. I know it was not pitched as a mini, but they all turn out to be minis usually from Mark Millar and from Image. So I'd be surprised if it goes past 10 issues.
Agreed. I'm a little thinking it may just go the six. It's hard to tell.
it's hard to tell. But yeah, I'm excited for it. I think, of course, the art's beautiful. The story's really a cool one. And if it continues to do as well, I think I misspoke and mentioned Tokyo Ghost. That's Rick Remender. I got a little confused. So most of Millaris have been a lot shorter, 4, 5, 6 issues. So that's what I expect here. But I expect there to be a nice payoff. And I thought this was a great start, so I gave it A-.
Oh, okay. I went with a B. I think he's doing, by and large, a good job on everything. I like how his stuff tends to have a very clear beginning, middle, and end. And therefore, there's the sense of, I actually got a story, not just them kind of, you know, tap dancing for a little bit until the sales petered out. So, like I said, I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with this.
Yeah, I think that this might appeal to a lot of folks. You know, if you like fantasy, you know, there's going to be some elements of that coming up here. I think that'll be appealing. If you like the some of the creator owned stuff at Image, you'll definitely dig this. It's got a strong creative vision in it, you can tell. So I think it's something that is easy to recommend, and you should definitely check out and see if it's for you.
Yeah, I just think they could have pitched it to people like, you know, if you like the old Warlord series or maybe even the Conan type stuff, you might find something enjoyable here. Versus they pitched it, I think, a little. They had a red herring in the pitch with the Where You Go When You Die.
Yeah, they should have went with a Walking Dead solicit and just said, hey, it's Millar, it's Capullo, and that's enough. Check it out. That I wouldn't have over-explained it.
Yeah. Sci-fi fantasy adventure. Yeah. Boom, done.
Boom, done. Check it out and make your own judgments of what it's about.
Yeah, that would make sense. So I am... in that ever-persistent state of still trying to catch up on my comics. I only had 6 left last time. Finished off that week of the 28th, but did not finish off the week of the 5th, and I've still got like 3 dozen comics from this week. And I think I've got like 60-some-odd coming next week. Lot of stuff coming out. Of the stuff I read, Civil War II is still continuing to hit the same story beat over and over again, so I think they've let that play out a little too long. Did you read Action Comics this week?
This week? No, I'm not current.
Because we talked about how, 2 weeks ago, how maybe Lois Lane could just kind of, you know, get her job back, even though she's not the Lois Lane.
Yeah, yeah.
This was the issue I was thinking of at the time.
Oh, awesome. I'm looking forward to checking that out.
So I think, by and large, they're doing some really good stuff on the Rebirth titles. I think some of the Superman Batman titles are fairly strong. A few of the others, maybe not quite so much. But I think the increased frequency is helping the story momentum quite a bit.
Yeah, it's there's just way more stuff than I can keep up with.
I can relate.
It's just there's way more good to great comics than I can read, and so I'm still in the fifth, the week of the fifth, working my way through some of these books and some of the ones that I'm really enjoying. You know, I'm reading a lot more DC than I ever have. So Rebirth has been, by and large, really successful for me, or for them to get me to read it, I guess. You know, Marvel's got a lot of great stuff. Of course, I love Image. There was, the week before that, there was another great issue of Astro City.
Yeah.
The Accountant, where we focused on The Accountant. And The Hanged Man, you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
that issue? I'm just, every time I forget about that book or just think it's just going to be okay, he just crushes it with another great issue. And this is the first of a two-parter, and it didn't feel at all like it was leaving me hanging. It felt like such a great issue, and I just can't wait for the next issue of that. Stuff like that, I can never not read. So I can't really, there's a lot of things I just can't get rid of from my pull list because they're always have these great issues. I don't ever want to miss them, but I can't get everything read. And that's, I always want to try the new stuff too.
That's kind of the realization I'm starting to have is out of the last 5 weeks, I've had 1 week where I got less than 50 comics. I had quite a few before that, but it's one of those things where, you know, between more frequent shipping at Marvel and DC, a couple of new lines spinning up here and there, there's just so much out there to read. And I'm sure if I if I really look at it, I could probably find a couple of places to cut. The question is, do I want to or not? There's a certain aspect of I think I need to, because I'm having a hard time keeping up. But I'm enjoying a lot of what I'm reading. And even the stuff that's, it's just okay. I enjoy reading to where when it's on that upswing, I can enjoy that part of it. But, you know, again, you read something like Astro City, and there's that whole desire to, you know, maybe be nice to go back and reread some of the earlier stories and stuff.
Oh, yeah, exactly. There's no going back and reading some of these things that I might have missed, the classic runs that I just need to catch up on. That's not going to happen right now. There's just way too much good stuff every week that I want to read. And sometimes it wasn't that long ago that I was, you know, I would be twiddling my thumbs waiting for Wednesday.
Yeah, I know that feeling. It's been a while for me for that, but yeah.
It was a while ago, but recently I have not been twiddling my thumbs. I've been like, oh no, there's another batch and I'm not caught up. But it's just a great golden age of writing and art and stories and diverse voices, and it's really been fun.
Yeah, it's a great time to be into comic book type properties, both the comics themselves, TV shows, etc. And you're right about the diversity, because there's just so many different takes on both the superhero genre and so many other genres in play. I was reading the Dead Man miniseries that came out, the first issue of that. And that's been one of the few just Dead Man stories where he's not like all kind of like a skeletal sort of a ghost.
The Dark Mansion of Forbidden Love?
That's the one.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading that.
But that's been one of the few Dead Man stories where just visually I found it really appealing, other than the whatever anthology DC Universe Presents, maybe, I think it was, at the start of the New 52. And prior to that, you've got to go back decades to not get like a Kelly Jones drawn kind of a thing.
Well, help me out. Should I read Death of Hawkman?
I would read Dead Man before Hawkman.
Well, yeah, Dead Man's a definite. How about Midnighter and the Apollo? And Apollo, number one. Should I bother?
I liked both the Midnighter and Apollo and the Adam Strange Hawkman one, but I don't know that I would consider either of those absolutely essential reading just yet. Neither have gotten far enough into the story to know if it's really gonna become, you know, a critical thing.
Yeah.
Story-wise or whatever. They're fine stories, but if you've got to pick and choose, and let's face it, these days you kind of do, there are better things to be read. There's also a lot of far worse things to be read.
How about Cage, number one?
You know, that's a good one to bring up, because it is a 70s take on the character with a very pronounced style to the story and the art.
Yeah.
And either you're going to love it, or there's going to be a you-gotta-be-kidding-me kind of a, it's a little too over the top. And for me, it was teetering right there on the edge of that on both ways. There are parts of it, it's like, that's where they went, that's what, how they drove it or whatever.
Like silliness?
Silliness is a good way to put it. It has its a unique voice that will either click with you, not click with you, or you'll be like, I don't know yet.
Okay.
You know, it's like a song you hear, and it's like, I don't love it or hate it, but maybe it'll grow on me. You're just not sure. Or maybe you're going to listen to it one too many times and never want to hear it again, sort of a thing. It has one of the most pronounced senses of style that a Marvel comic has had in a while.
How about Jessica Jones?
Have not read that one yet.
The Enchanted Tiki Room?
Didn't get that one. I haven't been getting most of the Disney sort of things.
That was a Disney thing?
Okay. It's based on the ride.
Okay. And then I saw the Death of X, number one, was getting some vitriol on the forum. I didn't want to read it because of the spoilers, so I didn't check that forum post out yet. Is that something worth reading?
What happened is they did a plot point that one of our listeners did not like, and it's one of those, like many plot points we get in various stories, how long will it stick?
Yeah.
And it's one to me that seemed ridiculously easy to undo if they needed to and wanted to. But this whole X-Men versus Inhumans thing, I feel they waited too long to come out with this. The whole what's happened with Cyclops to me had become a non-issue months ago. They're starting to address that. And I've got a take on the final few pages that I think is not true, but I think I could almost justify, I think I could almost sell as a, almost like a conspiracy theory kind of a take on the story, in terms of, they didn't do this, but isn't it a crazy idea? I enjoyed it fine, but this whole X-Men versus Inhumans thing, I'm over it already.
Yeah, I don't think you're in minority. I'm also very much over it. I'd be curious to see who's still really enjoying it.
I guess to me, this is one of the things where they're trying to answer one of the questions that they raised when Secret Wars ended and they went 8 months later.
Yeah.
But now that they're ending it, nobody really remembers the question.
Yeah.
Because there are a couple other questions that popped up that I don't think ever got answered, but nobody ever nobody cares about anymore. So read into that what you will. I think right now Marvel is in an odd place where they've got a ton of books kind of just playing out before the next wave of the Marvel Now 2.0 or whatever they're calling their next,
mm-hmm.
you know, branding initiative before that really kicks in.
No, I'm kind of curious about this week. I'm curious about Great Lakes Avengers, that first issue.
Curious about that one, too. I have not read that yet.
Mosaic looks kind of interesting. Solo, The Clone Conspiracy. This is some other number ones, another batch of number ones to check out.
Clone Conspiracy I read. That's a must read.
Is it?
I thought it was really interesting. It's a pivotal part of the Amazing Spider-Man storyline and has a lot of things that happen that I think matter. Now, again, like with anything, 6 months from now, we may be thinking, what the hell was that again? You know, but yeah. It really worked for me. I thought it was a great issue.
I'm guessing you haven't read Black or Cannibal.
No, nor do I plan to.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think so. What about Shipwreck? Isn't that an Aftershock? You might have.
You know, I'm not getting too many Aftershock titles right now. They went through Replica and a few others that I got on board late with but enjoyed. Those played out, and then the next round just didn't look too interesting to me.
Gotcha.
So I think Captain Kidd, that's Aftershock, right?
Yes.
That one I'm still reading. Matter of fact, didn't that just come out last week?
Second issue came out.
Yeah. So they're doing some good stuff, just it's not one where I'm all in on their stuff by any stretch of the imagination. I say that like they've got a ton of titles. They've come out with maybe a dozen titles total ever.
If that. Yeah. And a great launch, but can they keep it coming?
Great launch, great production quality. I think the secret to success for them is going to be maintaining quality, which I don't think they'll have any problem with, but finding a rhythm for when to release new titles. Because I think they batched them up a little too much. I would have trickled them out to whereas one's ending, others are starting, and there's kind of always something for you to be getting in their line.
Mm-hmm.
Versus Feast or Famine, which is how it is for me.
I'm guessing you skipped Lost Boys over at Vertigo?
Correct. I did read the second issue of Ever After.
Okay.
And
what,
I liked it.
What about Shade the Changing Girl?
I did read that.
Okay.
Liked it better than I expected to be honest, because I didn't have high expectations. Again, if I need to make cuts, the Young Animals line is one of the areas I'll look at first at DC.
Yeah.
Doom Patrol at this point will probably stick. Based on the preview I saw for Cave Carson, that one may not. Shade's kind of on the fence, and of course, I hadn't really seen much for Mother Panic.
Now I'm down to just two titles in the Hanna-Barbera relaunch, Scooby Apocalypse and Flintstones. Are you still all in on those?
I'm a little behind. I think I missed an issue that I'm waiting for them to send me at DCBS, but I did get, I think I got and I read six this time because that was what's going on with Velma.
Yeah.
And they're doing some interesting stuff. I just, where they went with the four, I thought was the wrong direction. Not that I'm thinking the whole thing is the right direction to begin with for the title. I prefer my Scooby either as Team Up or the Scooby-Doo Where Are You title. But yeah, out of those, Team Up is the favorite.
Yeah, I kind of like the Where Are You just a little bit more. But yeah, I'm still reading Apocalypse, but it's probably my least favorite of the three.
I'm not expecting the majority of the Hanna-Barbera line to stick around too much.
We're losing Wacky Raceland, right?
Oh yeah, that ends at six, and that'll be a mercy killing, I think. It's unrecognizable from its source material. Flintstones is still working for me, although I haven't read the latest issue.
Yep, it works for me.
And while I really like Future Quest, they have got to pick up the pace on that. I love the bit with the Impossibles and such, but it's like this is moving at a snail's pace. I mean, it's still the same, I think, afternoon from the first issue in the main storyline. It's just...
Wow. Wow, really?
From when the whole bit on Quest Island starts up to where they're at now,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's the next day yet. I could be wrong. It's been six issues. We've gotten, again, like with the stuff with the Impossibles, a lot of that was flashback or a backup story type thing. So in other stories in this book, a lot of time has elapsed. But in that main story, and I could easily be wrong. Maybe it's the next day or whatever, but it just...
Still, not a lot of time.
No. No, not at all. But I'm loving their take on the characters. I'm loving the style and sensibility about it. And I don't want them to rush through things either, but they've been doing kind of a half story and then a backup thing to kind of get some of those characters back out there, I guess, before they're in the main storyline. And while I like that, it's like the main storyline's moving too slow. So we'll see where they go with that. I'm enjoying it, but impatient.
Yeah. And sales aren't there either.
Well, I said it when they launched the Hanna-Barbera line as let's do bold new directions in these characters while simultaneously doing and announcing Rebirth of let's stop doing bold new characters and go back to the comfortable and the familiar.
Yeah.
So go figure.
We'll have to do a Rebirth of the Hanna-Barbera line this time next year.
Yeah. Yeah. Hanna-Barbera redrawn. I don't know. So we'll see where they go.
Yeah.
So preview spotlight clips are going to be due on Saturday, November 5th, first thing in the morning, Central Time. Everybody did a great job of sending stuff in a couple of days early and stuff this time around. Really appreciate that. I wound up having a fairly busy weekend between, you know, when I had to get the stuff edited and some other stuff going on. So, again, having things early always helps. We had the comic book page teleconference this past weekend. Had a lot of fun, some great discussions there. The next one will be on November 12th, 7 p.m. Central Time. Just hop on Skype. There's instructions for how to do that on the forum. And if you're going to show up, just put a note in that forum thread to just let me know who to expect. And it was last week as we record this. It was two weekends ago as you listen to this. But yeah, had some really good discussions on some stuff. So a lot of fun.
So your move to the weekend after the previews clips are due, is that's working out well for the teleconference then?
Yeah, reasonably well.
Okay.
In this case, it overlapped when I had to do the number crunching, so it got a little busy and stuff. And I had a couple of lengthy episodes to edit. So you know, there's that. But it allows me to kind of mention it in the preview spotlight. So there's the clips on one Saturday, the preview spotlight gets released on that Wednesday, and then the following Saturday is the teleconference. So, you know, we had a handful of people. It was not like it was a mob scene or anything of the sort. Certainly more people are welcome to show up and chat. It's just whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, so after this episode drops, that Wednesday will be, the previews will be out, so time to get those clips in, right?
Yeah, because, yeah, by the time this goes up, the online solicits and stuff should be available, and like you said, the Wednesday after, which would be, what, the 26th, that's when previews comes out. So, plenty of interesting stuff. I'm hearing JLA Mighty Morphin Power Ranger crossover from Boom, looking forward to that. Should be plenty of good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you've said it before. It's really tough to be a casual comic book fan. There's just so much going on. The cycle never ends. It's awesome. It's a wealth of stuff out there, but it's, I'd like to meet some casual fans and just to quiz them on just what do you read and how do you read it? How do you consume this casually and not turn into crazy people like we are?
Well, and I would also challenge anyone who, you know, everyone who's out there has a budget, that's fine. If that budget isn't filled with stuff you are absolutely loving, my challenge to you is identify, again, what your budget is, but also what sort of things you do love, and then engage with the community, be it us or other people. There are things out there that you can usually fill your entire budget with, unless you're crazy like me. with things that are absolutely just brilliant comics.
Yeah.
There's just so much great stuff out there.
That really, yeah, really is your in your wheelhouse or speaks to you. You can definitely find them. And
the big challenge I have these days is budgeting my time between what comics do I want to read, what movies do I want to watch, which TV shows do I want to watch, etc. There's just so much out, great material coming out.
Good problems to have.
Absolutely. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I'm good.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Green Lanterns number 9 from DC, Infamous Iron Man number 1 from Marvel, and Spell on Wheels number 1 from Dark Horse Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.